have 10 minutes for questions.
I know you want to hear country music, Irv. So, got a question? Yes.
Yeah, my nephew's over in Iraq right now as an Air Force sergeant, and he sent me emails that the number of deaths of U.S. troops is 3 to 4 times what it's reported. He said the only reports the government they're giving out are one direct combat, but anything friendly fire, traffic accidents, training accidents are not being counted as deaths. Can you speak to the truth of that, and can you, how can we find out the real number of deaths and of wounded and injured of our troops in Iraq?
Having lived through the Vietnam experience, when there was so much deception about what went on, I have a deep suspicion that we're never going to know in this immediate period how many people are really dying. I think they are trying very much to keep that out of the news. It's deliberately suppressed. I mean, the one issue that we neither of us talk very much about, Mr. Pitt or I, is the whole effect of the media. I mean, if you embed the troops, or you embed the reporters among the troops, and then how can they report whatever they're seeing? And this whole issue, the whole effort has been to control the press, and it's done because they learned from Vietnam that if you have guys like Halberstam and these other guys walking around all over, and Seymour Hersh and all the rest, suddenly the American people are going to get the picture and say, hey, wait a minute, this isn't what we're in for. So they are working very hard to sanitize this thing so that no one will see anything. And they do have to admit some things because they happen right out in front of everybody else. So they know it's going to be reported. But I have a strong feeling that we don't know anything about these people who were injured. They're reported as injured. You know, there were 2 deaths and 8 people injured. Whatever happened to the 8 people? Did they die? Well, who knows? They're not going to tell us. So I think that there is a deliberate attempt to keep the truth of the casualties because they know that a daily report. I mean, I get up every morning to NPR. And, you know, the 6 o'clock news, they come on with the headlines of the day. Another soldier was killed in front of a hospital in Iraq. I mean, that's no way to wake up every day. And we've been seeing it day after day after day after day. And they try to deflect our intelligence by talking about, well, we killed Saddam's sons over here. So look at this over here. See those guys we killed? And let us show you the bodies. They were outraged when any American body was shown. But, oh, no, it didn't make any difference. They want to show those to keep your eye on that. And this is all a deliberate PR campaign, in my view. They are keeping the truth from the American people.
Bodycount.com.
If that's, I don't know anybody who has a good number. Maybe Bodycount.com does have the best one. Yes?
Many of us have become aware that one of the most dangerous weapons of mass destruction today is public education in America. We are deeply concerned with the military recruitment of our young. We try to keep drug dealers out of our schools. We try to keep pedophiles out of our schools. But we allow people to exploit our children for the purpose of violence to come into our schools. We are wondering if there is any hope for some help from Congress to address this problem of the JROTC program. These are children. They need to grow up. They need to have their cognitive abilities in place before they can be exploited by adults. We hope.
I'm with you. I agree. There ought to be a law, but unfortunately, the law we did pass, Leave No Child Behind, had a provision in it that made it all right for them to go into the schools. That's the majority opinion in this country at the moment. It's wrong. They clearly are terrified, and that's why Charlie Rangel and I and a couple of others, John Conyers, put in the bill on the draft. Because we wanted to stimulate a talk about where are we going to continue to get the people. And what they're doing is going out into the community looking for youngsters who can't figure out how they're going to pay for college. So they say, hey, look, if you come in here and you serve 3-4 years, we'll give you enough to go to college. And if you're a kid without much opportunity because of economic circumstances, seems like a pretty good deal. I think less of a good deal today than it did about 3 years ago. But I still think they're using those kind of sort of lost leaders, if you will, of getting these kids involved. And I think it is insidious. I think if a kid wants to go down and enlist, fine. Everybody knows the military is down there. The office is down there. Go down there and enlist. Why have them coming into the school selling the idea that this is a good way for you to spend your life? Let them make their own decision on that without the pressure and whatever that comes with that kind of stuff. You all lived through what I did in the Vietnam War. In the Vietnam War, the problem was that the older people in this country had all served honorably in the Second World War. So when it came their kids' time to go, generally the reaction was, well, yeah, of course I served. You ought to go and serve. And there was a lot of pressure in the house. Not much pressure in the house today. Not much pressure in the house today. Not from the guys who've served in Vietnam. And that's why they have to go around the family and go into the schools to grab them. Yes?
Thank you, sir. We appreciate your comments. You were on the mark. But you kept referring to the politics of fear. And to many of us, one of the main, you have two culprits. Number one is the media. Now, middle America cannot know the truth if the media doesn't print it. And the other culprit is Congress. Now, the Republicans do what they naturally do, what comes naturally. But you, sir, what can you do to light a fire under the ass of the Democrats to wake them up?
I get your drift, and I'm going to get a copy of this tape and take it back and play it for the Democratic caucus. I'm not giving excuses. But I explained earlier the chapter from Seattle. We were talking about this. Somebody raised this question. I think it's worth saying something about it. You all understand about what it's like to be in combat, or some of you do, certainly. We were sitting in a room in Washington, D.C., I was, on the 6th floor of the Longworth building, and we were having a meeting, and there was a television set in the corner. And we're talking about the budget. I'm on the budget committee. We're talking about how we're going to spend all the money. And suddenly a plane flies into a building. Everybody looks at it and says, gee, how could that happen? It's a bright, sunshiny day. What's going on? I mean, this is nuts. So we let it, you know, that's New York. Who knows? So we went back to our meeting. About 15 minutes later, it happened again. And the chairman said, my God, we should go back to our offices. So we close the meeting down. And I go down my 6 floors to my office. By the time I reached the 1st floor, the police were running through the halls of that building saying, run for your lives. Now, we went through the same, as human beings, we went through the same trauma as people in a war situation. We didn't know where to go. Didn't know where to run to. And then we were up in the house on the floor one day, the next day, and they declared a bomb alert. So they said, clear the house. So everybody goes out, we go down the stairs, and there are 435 of us standing in the parking lot saying, what do we do now? Now, the shock of that did for us what many of you have experienced or know people who have experienced, and that is gave them a post-traumatic dose of stress. People couldn't sleep. People didn't know what to do, didn't know what to think. They were troubled by this. And much of the initial reaction to not saying no to the president, because what do you do when you're scared? I mean, when you're a kid, you always say, hey, Dad, what do we do now? Or, Ma, what do we do? Well, we turn to our president. Mr. President, what do we do? And unfortunately, his suggestions have not been very well thought through. He was very ill-prepared for that moment when suddenly 280 million people turned to him. And people got caught up in saying, well, how can I be against the president? The people in my district want, you know, they want something to happen here, and they want security. They want security, security, security. Not asking themselves, is what he's saying going to get us security? Their critical faculties stopped functioning. They were operating purely on their emotions, not thinking. Because the minute you start thinking about what the president did, I mean, I don't know where he was for that first couple of hours, but he certainly wasn't out there standing by the flag and saying, I'm very certain we're going to be able to handle this. I mean, he appeared after a while. So this was a national event that we are working out. And the Congress is now coming back to their senses and saying, you know, this, and now it's fun, it's not funny, but it's interesting to watch various members of Congress say, well, you know, I had my doubts, but I didn't, and he tricked us and he misled us and the British misled us and Tennant and Condoleezza Rice, and now everybody's pointing to somebody who misled me. I would have known if they had just given me the right information. And they're all defending themselves. And I think that there is a serious attempt by the Congress to get back on its feet and make some sense. And I think that we passed the Patriot Act. Bingo. Boom. 3 weeks, it was gone. Only 75 of us voted against it. But they wanted to bring out a Patriot Act 2. And the Congress said, just a minute here now. Just a minute here. Things are going on that we don't like. And so that bill hasn't come out. So there are some evidences that suggest that people are coming back up and making better sense. It's not, it doesn't excuse some of the things that we did initially. And what we're continuing to do with prisoners in Guantanamo and prisoners at an Air Force base in Baghdad and all kinds of things that are going on right now that we've simply let them have free rein in a way that we violate the Geneva Convention and all kinds of stuff. Well, she was the only one. There were six or seven of us others who stood there thinking, how am I going to explain in Afghanistan? But when it came to Iraq, it was a lot easier for an awful lot of us. Yep.
You spoke about cleaning up the nuclear waste. Why is it that the Congress is permitting the continuation of making nuclear waste? The people in Carlsbad are desperate for jobs, so they're willing to have a Pitts production place made there so that they'll have few new jobs. And I think that Congress should be telling them there are better ways to make it.
So do I. The state of Washington has the worst nuclear waste dump in the whole world at Hanford. When I ran for governor in 1980, we passed an initiative, Don't Waste Washington, because we had a governor who thought it was a good idea to bring all the waste in the world to Washington. And we said, wait a minute, wait. And now we've got leakage into the Columbia River and all kinds of danger to our salmon and our wheat and our wine industry. And all those issues are, I think, important reasons why we ought to be cleaning it up. So there are some of us who continue to hammer on this issue and don't think that the answer to the power crisis in this country is build nuclear power plants. I don't think we ought to build one more until we have a place for the waste.
So they're going to go for dirty tricks. That's what I believe. Now,
something Florida-like. The computers involved are under some kind of Republican control. I'm a little bit unclear, and that's why I'm asking the question, because I'm just wondering if you, as a member of Congress, can give us some information about this.
I too worry about it. I think one of the biggest disasters of the last 2 years was the election of 2000. Well, we had a president selected by the Supreme Court because of manipulations of the voting, at least in Florida. Lord knows where else that may have gone on, but we certainly know down there that they did it. And my view is that this whole business, now we're going to fix it by making computerized voting with no paper trail, is not going to solve anything. It's going to make it more easily manipulable. I read the other day in a newspaper a story about these ATM machines. And a store owner had an ATM in his store, and people kept coming in getting money from it. And it was programmed to give out money. And they were after this guy to, you know, why didn't you call the bank and why didn't you report it and blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, it's an ATM machine. It's a computer. How could it be wrong, right? Well, that's all right with money and banks. I don't worry about them. But what I do worry about is this computerizing all the voting in this country so that I really would like to go back to the old days of a paper ballot. Put an X. I know it's not so, it's much harder to manipulate that. But I think in the long run, that's where we're going to have to go, because they are really threatening the democracy. If people don't believe there was an honest election, then we're going to have real trouble in this country. If this becomes Mexico, where after the election they say, hey, they stole it again, then people say, well, you know, why, what's to stop us from, and you create ferment at the bottom that you create it yourself if you don't have an honest election. People have to believe in the election process that it actually is working and operating correctly and fairly. And I believe that we really endanger our democracy if we don't deal with that. The Congress had some investigations about what went on in Florida, and they said they passed a bill, but they haven't put any money into it. You can always tell when the Congress doesn't really mean it. When they pass a bill and then there's no money, then you figure out, oh, that was just for show. And that's really what happened in this whole issue. It is a big issue. You should be all looking at the election system in your own states. You should be looking at how they're changing what's going on electronically in the elections. If all the votes in your state are counted by a computer, wonder. Yeah.
I appreciate your use of Vietnam to shed light on what is happening today with the war in Iraq. One of the things I know about the Vietnam War is that the support for the French and then support for the American War started first with Truman, a Democrat, went to Eisenhower, a Republican, it went to Kennedy, a Democrat, Johnson, a Democrat, and Kennedy, a Republican. And I hear Democrats who are getting lined up to try to get the Democratic nomination saying things like Bush is not being strong enough against the danger of domestic terrorism. And I hear you saying a lot of things that we applaud here today as being ideas. Your ideas match our ideas. You are in a position of power. Could you please relate to us specifically what you are doing in your position of power to implement your ideas? Are you building coalitions with other like thinkers like you? Or is the lesson from Vietnam, Democrat, Republican, being repeated again?
Yes.
First thing that my answer to that would be, the reason I'm here is because I don't think the Vietnam War ended because the Congress woke up one day and said, you know, we're involved in a stupid thing. Let's stop this. They did it because the people in this country said, We are tired of this. Stop it. And it was not a pretty picture. I mean, the demonstrations and all of what went on in this country happened because the people in government were not paying attention, and ultimately the people have to bang on them about this issue. I think that the coalition between veterans and peace people and church people, and there's a lot of... The interesting thing about the first march we had in Seattle was I looked out there, and there's a sign for the AFL-CIO. And I said to the guy who was our AFL-CIO guy, I said, hey, I don't know when you guys came in Vietnam, but here you are in the first march. It's good to see labor here. I mean, I think that there is a potential coalition of the people that is strong enough to put the message to the Congress, we don't want this. You're doing this on your own. If you want to keep doing that, we're going to find somebody to replace you. And I think that that is the only, that's the most powerful. Now, some of us keep raising issues. I was telling the group today, there's a group of us who sit and try and figure out parliamentary ways. Because remember, you've got right now a one-party government. You got President Bush and the Republican Senate, Republican House. The Democrats have no levers of power, direct power. It's all indirect. So we have to find ways to undermine them or stop, jam logs in the wheels or something. But we have no way to get up and actually drive the tank. That's the only thing we have left.
Have you used it yet?
I'm not in the Senate. If I was...
Party.
Well, you may see him use it. But I think that the issue is that we are working, more and more people are beginning to understand that the public is not satisfied with what's going on, and members are getting more and more strong. We defeated them on a couple of things here recently. We've stopped them on the Patriot 2 Act. So there's a number of things where we are making coalitions and getting people aware that it's possible that we have to change it. It is not, our history is not a history of the Democrats are pure and the Republicans are evil. It is a system controlled by the vested interests. And they don't care whether you're a Democrat or Republican as long as you go along with the general theme.
My point is that you are in a position as an elected representative with a certain amount of power, albeit not all powerful. I wanted to get you, if you could, to be a little more specific on exactly what you are doing to try to change these ideas that you expressed that got all our applause.
Well, what we do and what we try to do, obviously, first of all, on all the domestic issues, is put up an alternative to what they're doing. I mean, if you want to look at Head Start or you want to look at the health programs or what they're doing to Medicare, what they're doing to pharmaceuticals, the Democrats are putting up an alternative and saying, well, if you'd stopped the war, if you hadn't gone to war, you could do this. Or if you hadn't done the tax cut. And there are more and more things where we're beginning to have an effect on them. And the members, the Republican members of the Congress recognize they're going to have to go home and defend all this stuff that they cut. And people right now, you know, nobody feels, I don't know if you've ever broken a leg, but you break a leg, well, they give you pain in the hospital, then you go home, and then you feel the pain. That's what's starting to happen, is that people are going home and discovering they're not so eager because we put up an alternative that would actually work as opposed to what Bush is asking for. Good example is the Leave No Child Behind. He says, I care about all children. Leave no child behind. And it's going to cost $17 billion. What did he put in the budget? Seven. Now, he didn't put in the money, so we've just been jabbing him over and over and over again on this. What do you mean, leave no child behind? Of course you intend to leave people behind. You don't put the money in. And they're getting more and more sensitive to that. So this is building up toward getting rid of them. Yeah. I'm convinced. Yeah.
We'll have time for two more questions, and we'll give the honor of the last question to William Pitt Rivers. The gentleman here, and then William Pitt Rivers.
In your own state, this is off the pushback sheet, which is all right. How do you feel personally in your state, in your constituency, about medical care in the United States, and it affects veterans and everybody, and single-payer systems? Are you pretty much in tune with something like that, or aren't you familiar with it?
I came to Congress in 1988 because I believe we should have a national health plan, a single-payer system. And I'm determined to live long enough to see it happen. My father died at 93, so I got quite a stretch to go. And I think that the issue in this country, if you look at a democracy, the one last thing that this country has not used the common good concept on is health care. We don't have any question about the fire department. That's a common good. The police department, a common good. The highways, a common good. The schools, a common good. Health care, you're on your own, folks. And it is... I could find the money in a lot of places. Yes, I have. Boy, would I like a copy of that. I'd stand right on the floor and show that.
Wow.
Afterward, you got to give me your name so I can find her.
Thank you very much.